Before there was Hollywood, there was Chicago. In fact, there still is Chicago as a major motion picture city. But what a wonderful and important place in history do we find the city of Chicago, beginning at the beginning of the silent era. The new edition of the book Hollywood on Lake Michigan recounts it all from that era to the modern day. And look at that, the two authors right here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, Michael Corcoran for 10 years, tour guide. I guess your favorite one is the Chicago Cinema Tour.
Mm-hmm. Cinematic Chicago Tour.
And Arnie Bernstein, he's a film historian and author. Gents, good to have you.
Good morning.
A fine book, a lot of fun, and it's interesting. You guys are film nuts, but you are not film critics, and there's probably a pretty clear distinction there.
Movies are just what I love. I absorb them and play them in my head over and over. There's several movies I can do from heart backwards and forwards. It's
absolutely.
Is there a treatment for that? That sounds like more than a passion.
I hope not.
It's an obsession.
Yeah. I hope not. I enjoy it too much.
But what is it that you guys like about movies, though, other than the enjoyment of the moment? Is it the historical aspects? Is it the production values? Is it the difference in how one director from another will pass their trade?
I love the way that it is such an incredibly collaborative art form. I mean, it's an industrial art form almost. Because basically, I mean, you have a whole army of people that are doing different things. Light people, sound people, the set people. I mean, it's about 200 or 300 artists coming together to create one single piece of work.
And I like them as social documents. What do they say about us as a people, or, you know, 40, 50 years ago, 100 years ago?
Yeah, it's only when we go back in time and look at movies and maybe think, wow, that's so out of date. But in their context, in their time, in that setting, they had everything to do with what the messages of the moment were.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Now, the book, I love it. It's really a lot of fun. And there's a lot about the silent era, Mary Pickford, Charlie Chaplin, and I guess most of the vestiges of that time are all but gone now. Is that right?
There's a few left in Chicago. The old SNA studio still stands. It's on the 1300 block of Argyle.
And what is it today?
It's St. Augustine's College, which is a two-year college for largely Hispanic students. But the original facade still stands there on the door, and the building layout is...
With the words SNA?
Oh, the door mm-hmm. says SNA.
And what does that word mean?
It came from the owners of the studio, their initials, George Spoor and Bronco Billy Anderson, SNA.
Well, tell us about that time. I'm curious that... Hollywood in the 19-teens and just before that, it was a bean field. Why Chicago and not New York?
Well, film like then was sort of like what the internet is today. It kind of sprang up everywhere. And Chicago had wonderful resources. We were a hub for vaudeville, so there were all these actors and, you know, theater people around. And people were just curious and started... You know, they wanted to take the old kinetoscope and figure out ways to put it on a bigger screen and make a lot of money having people come into theaters. And that's more or less how it got started here in Chicago. There were two major studios. There was the Zelig Polyscope, which was at the corner of what's now today like Western Avenue and Byron, around that area, Byron and Claremont, somewhere around there. And again, the SNA, which came after Zelig.
But, Michael, why not New York? I mean, was Chaplin, he didn't come here naturally.
Well, I mean, like Arnie said, Chicago was a hub for vaudeville, and basically it was a transportation hub, which is why it was a hub for vaudeville. Also, I think the entrepreneurial spirit of Chicago. I mean, Zelig himself, Colonel Zelig, I mean, Chicago was the place where he started up his studio, and
Yeah, he started experimenting here in Chicago with film projection systems and more or less took blueprints of other people, the Lumiere brothers, specifically tinkered it with his own way and created what he called the Zelig Polyscope.
The Lumiere brothers. Lumiere brothers.
Lumiere brothers, yeah.
I remember hearing a story about a early film that they would set up and project it onto a sheet of a locomotive running toward the camera, and people would scream and run away.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese recreated that.
Moving images before.
Yeah, Scorsese recreated that in Hugo.
As an homage to Méliès?
Yeah. That movie was a love letter to the silent movies.
Yeah. And that guy Méliès, all the films that have been lost and the few that we still have are astounding.
Yeah. Now, depending on what source you believe, between 60 to 90% of all silent films are gone. Various reasons. People just didn't believe in keeping them. They just dump them when they were done. Or it was filmed on nitrate stock, which was flammable and deteriorates.
Well, Scorsese, isn't he leading a campaign to try to duplicate what remaining few there still are?
Very much so. Taxi Driver itself had to be restored, and it was a 1976 film. Yeah.
But it wasn't on that self-destructive.
No, but it just deteriorated. The image deteriorated.
You've got a lot of stories in the book. I could just solicit whatever you think was the most compelling. Tell me about Charlie Chaplin, though, making an SNA movie.
Yeah, now Chaplin was signed by SNA after his term at Keystone. And he was signed for $1,000 a week, which was just outrageous sum at that time. He was promised this enormous bonus.
That's a nice sum in these times.
Yeah, no kidding.
So they were obviously making a lot of money in the motion picture business.
Yes, they were.
And, or the movie manufacturing business.
Yeah, and actually at that time, one of out of every five films in the world came out of Chicago. And he was signed by SNA, and he came in December of 1917. And, of course, December, Chicago, cold. He hated the facilities. First of all, they wouldn't give him his bonus. He was kind of bounced from room to room, saying, "No, it's here. No, it's here. No, it's here." And then they would take the negative and they would edit on the negative rather than make a work print. He hated that. Francis X. Bushman, who was kind of the Brad Pitt of the studio, said to Chaplin, "No, this is the antithesis of how we work." In Chaplin's autobiography, he said, "I didn't like it, and I didn't like the word antithesis."
Say that four times.
Yeah.
Well, so was he a big star then, Michael? Was he already an established?
He was already a pretty big star. That was another point of contention. Was I believe Spohr pretended that he didn't know who he was when Charlie asked for his bonus. I don't know who this guy is. You know, tried to pretend that.
Yeah, and at that point, Chaplin was the most popular star in the world. His film that he made here was called His New Job, which was a parody of what goes behind the scenes in a movie studio, which partially was a slam at Senate, but I think was also a slam at and what was going on at SNA, too. In the end, he demanded that his contract be fulfilled at their California facility after making the one film here in January. And Gloria Swanson actually is an extra in that film, in His New Job. She plays a small part of a secretary. You can see her in the background.
Was she a teenager then herself?
Yeah, roughly.
I'm talking, that was Arnie Bernstein and Michael Corcoran, the two authors of Hollywood on Lake Michigan. It's the second edition. It's been updated. So, well, what happened, guys? Why didn't we become what would become Hollywood?
Well, production closed down in Chicago. Again, winter. People started moving their studios out to California. SNA and Zelig were at the forefront of that, too.
Now, why would that matter so much? Because wasn't everything shot indoors or most things?
Well, the lighting systems were not very sophisticated, and a lot of stuff was shot outdoors. You can actually see on some of the older movies the sets kind of flapping in the wind. But they
flapping in the wind,
flapping
painted
in the wind.
Sets?
Some of the old Bronco Billy films, you can see them. They look like high school production sets, but back then it was state of the art.
Hey, the audience wasn't sophisticated enough to care, probably.
No, to them it was
eye popping Marvel.
Exactly.
Entertainment.
Exactly. There's actually an old Wizard of Oz you can look up online that they shot at Zelig Polyscope. Frank Baum wrote for Zelig, and they did the first Wizard of Oz here in Chicago in 1910. And you can see it online. It's very charming.
So go on. Michael, tell me more about why Hollywood took off. Was it the winters mostly?
It was the winters, and I think, they just didn't want to live in Chicago. I mean, people were the studio people just wanted, I mean, you could shoot all year round. Land was cheap at the time in California, so I think it was just economic forces and climactic forces.
It's funny, though, Arnie, we still are I won't say a powerhouse, but it's still a major global player in filmmaking.
Oh, yeah, and that's largely thanks to the Chicago Film Office and the wonderful work that Rich Moskal does there. They bring in productions here to Chicago. We have such great architecture. And
can be destroyed on film, Michael Bay likes to do.
Bless the Transformers. Yeah. But on the other hand, there's wonderful things like the Dark Knight series that just use Chicago in all sorts of ways. And I'm blanking on the name.
Davis.
Andy Davis, who did The Fugitive. He's a Chicago boy. He did a film called The Package, which was a Cold War thriller. He made Chicago look like East Berlin, like the Palos was the Black Forest. Washington, D.C. was the Field Museum.
What's the movie with Jimmy Stewart, 777?
Oh, called Northside 777.
Northside 777. Now, that is a cool movie just for scenery.
Oh, yeah. It was a true story. It was about a man who's convicted of killing a police officer. He was wrong conviction. His mother scrubbed floors for years and took out an ad in the newspaper. And a couple of reporters, combined into one for the Jimmy Stewart character, started investigating this. And Adolf Zucker was fascinated with the story and demanded it be shot in Chicago. And if you watch the film, you can see Chicago from the 1940s. They shot in Bridgeport. They shot downtown. They shot actually around here. All over the city, they shot in the roundhouse in Joliet, and when there were still prisoners in there. It's quite an interesting movie.
What are the best movies? You guys sort of diverge a little bit on what you think are the best Chicago-based movies. Arnie, what do you think you like?
Well, Northside 777 is one of my favorites. I'm also a big fan of Soul Food, done by George Tillman. I'm a huge fan.
Hoop Dreams?
Hoop Dreams is great. I love Hoop Dreams. And I'm a big fan, I'm sorry to say, of Herschel Gordon Lewis.
The gore guy?
The gore guy. He invented the gore film here in Chicago. Wonderful things like The Blood Feast, Gore, Gore, Girls.
Wonderful things like The Blood Feast.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I love that movie. It's a great movie. But it's, I've heard him say once, you never heard the words take two on my sets. They were terrible movies. They were shot here in the 60s, showed mostly at drive-ins. But the gore film was invented here in Chicago. And they're terrible movies, and he knew it, and they know they're terrible. And I have a certain fondness
for them. Kind of like Roger Corman?
No. Roger Corman was huge, big budget, multi-million dollars in comparison to these things.
But they were kind of trampy, trashy films, too.
Yeah, well, these made them look classy. But Herschel's work is a lot of fun if you got a stomach for it. It's in its own way quite
charming.
Where
do you find things like that?
You can get them all over the place. They are available on DVD.
You know, I have a friend who's on the show once in a while, Jerry Simsky. He runs a place called... Westmont Movie Classics Club. He has 22,000 titles that he rents out. He's just a hobbyist. He was on Oprah, in fact, one time.
Wow.
I bet he's got obscura like that.
Oh, and there's lots of that stuff, too, from Chicago.
Michael, what are your faves from Chicago?
I really like Stranger Than Fiction. That was with Will Ferrell. A lot of people haven't seen it. Will Ferrell played an IRS agent who one day starts hearing a narrator in his head describing his life. Emma Thompson's in it, Dustin Hoffman, Maggie Gyllenhaal. It's just very nice.
And why do you like it, though? Is it just a lot of good scenery?
A lot of good scenery. They use Chicago in a unique way. It's set in any city, but they use Chicago specifically for all the modernist buildings, all the Ludwig Mies van der Rohe buildings, so sort of as a sort of a shorthand for conformity sort of thing. It's a They were trying for the feel of a Hal Ashby comedies from the 70s, and they really succeeded. It's a lovely movie. I try to go for the obscure because I'm the new guy, you know, the update guy. There's also a movie that I get evangelistic about called Unconditional Love.
Don't know that.
Kathy Bates plays a frumpy Chicago housewife. Dan Aykroyd is her husband. She idolizes.
It's a comedy?
It's a hilariously weird comedy. She idolizes this cheesy love crooner played by Jonathan Pryce, and he gets killed in Chicago right before she's supposed to see him on a talk show.
All right.
Actually, downstairs from here, near the Billy Goat. A lot of the movie is set in the underground of Chicago. It's just nobody's seen it. It sat on the shelves for years and then was released to Starz Network with no fanfare at all. But if it would have come out at the time it was supposed to, I think it would have been a huge hit. It's just hilarious.
It was done by the same people who did My Best Friend's Wedding, and they wanted to shoot it here after doing My Best Friend's Wedding.
So what is the location other than the Loop where you most see a scene from Chicago?
Wrigley Field. That's like the standard shot. You can't have a movie without, and as a Sox fan, that really bothers me. But it's, Wrigley Field's one of the standard places. Lakeshore Drive, which is just beautiful and really showcases the city nicely, is always
seen. So what movie would you recommend we go check out if we can find it that you would both agree on, just has the grandeur and sweep of the city that is just fun to watch? Do you agree on maybe one?
Or do we? I don't
know. I think we agree on a lot of them. The Fugitive.
Yeah, The Fugitive is
one of those
great
movies.
What is it
about
that movie that it has such staying power?
Well, it's a great story.
It's
a fun story. Jane Lynch actually has a small part in it as a nurse.
That's right.
She talks with...
Interesting. I'll have to look for that. Because they have some local reporters I've worked with.
Right.
There's a scene where... pack of screaming wolves of annoying reporters.
Yeah, no. That's when she was doing the real life Brady Bunch here.
Well, the book is terrific. Hollywood on Lake Michigan is the name. Remember that. You can try to remember the authors, but if you're driving, you won't write them down. Michael Corcoran and Arnie Bernstein. Gents, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So much fun.
My
Went
pleasure.
By fast, doesn't
yeah.
it? Always
Good
does.
Time.
It's the magic of radio.